Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. And hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's podcast. Opening up with politics, and a lot of politics has been going on lately. Actually, a lot of law and politics going on lately as Special Counsel Robert Mueller announcing some indictments and a plea agreement and some of this stuff expected, some of the stuff perhaps taking people by surprise, maybe taking the White House by surprise at all. There's the political aspect and the legal aspect to all of this. I want to start with the legal aspect and understand how this plays out, what can happen, where things go from here. Joining me is one of the city's great lawyers, Gal Pasetsky, partner with the law firm of Pasetsky and Berliner. And he knows this stuff, former prosecutor. He gets all of this and he can explain to us. Gal, welcome to the podcast. I think this is your first time on the podcast, though I do see you often on my Politics Tonight show.
Yes, I think it was the second time, actually. But how are you?
Well, I consider this a consideration of the a continuation of the first. So you see, that's how it goes.
There you
go. So, okay. So let me ask you this. My take on our air has been that the Manafort indictment was expected to come at some point. Not really surprised. Doesn't seem to tie the president to any kind of collusion with Russia. But then there was that surprise agreement that comes out of a guy who comes out of nowhere. Nobody's ever heard of him. And that may be the one that really may lead to something here.
Yes. Papadopoulos apparently has been cooperating probably sometime since January of this year. And I think it's very important to note that his plea became public knowledge on the same day as Manafort was to be turned in and surrendered to the U.S. Marshals in answer to an indictment. And I think what's important here is, although Manafort indictment does not touch on any of the collusion issues, he does have a direct link to Papadopoulos with emails and acknowledgments that he knew and actually was part of the conversation, if you will, with right. Russia, possibly.
Well, some of the questions, Gal, that people ask would be, as you just said, he's cooperating. This may have been going on for many months now. And so, therefore, you wonder, was he wearing a white? Look, he got a pretty good deal. I mean, may face no time, likely, maybe no more than 6 months, based on how he's been charged. And he's been charged with lying to the FBI. But the question is it likely that clearly that he's been flipped and he's helping them out? So do we expect more bombshell information at some point of various tapes when he was wired and recording other people? Or might that just be the stuff of James Bond?
No, the FBI and the government, the federal government, they love the use of wires. They love the use of actual words to catch you with your own words. This is how they create cases. The majority of the cases in federal court that go to trial, and even those that do not go to trial, involves a lot of wire, whether it's consensual wires by a CI or somebody who is cooperating with them, or sometimes it's wires that you don't know, they're listening to your phone calls. But that's how they love it. That's their bread and butter. And I think that there's a good likelihood that there would be some wires here. They did not keep Papadopoulos under wraps for so long for nothing.
Well, you just said that Papadopoulos has been tied to Manafort. So it would also seem sort of, superfluous. If the wires have to do with conversations between Manafort and Papadopoulos, they've already got Manafort and other things. Is it also logical to assume that there's other people involved? And we know the White House, of course, has been saying, this guy was a volunteer, which, by the way, is interesting because Jared and Ivanka, they're all volunteers, too, in terms of the official view of all of this, if you want to look at categorizations. But the bottom line is that can we assume, even though they're saying he was nobody, we might be getting him in conversations with higher, maybe Jared Kushner? I don't know, but maybe that's possible.
Look, they're all connected somehow. The meeting that they had in New York that one day, Jared Kushner was there, Trump Jr. was there, Manafort was there. They all discussed this, and then there were emails exchanged. So did Papadopoulos have the connection with Russia? Undoubtedly he did. But was he able to record people like Kushner or Trump Jr.? I don't know, but definitely he was. He had enough connection to get the government to believe in him and believe that he can get them the bigger fish. So I think
that's the only reason for them to work with him like that.
Bombshells coming.
It's the only reason for the government to work with him like that, right? I mean, is who can you give us?
Right. I mean, that's exactly it. The government will not go to that great length without thinking that he can get them what they want.
Now, I don't know if I'm pulling you out of your world of expertise, which is vast anyway, but, you know, there are some who think that at some point President Trump just pardons everybody here. Now, I know the president's pardoning power is pretty vast. It's almost unquestionable. And he could step in and pardon Manafort and Papadopoulos, I mean, if he wanted to. And if Jared gets in trouble or Don Jr., I mean, he pardoned the whole lot of them from federal charges. There's been some talk as to whether, for example, General Flynn might face some state charge or even Manafort some state charges and save the day on that. But I'm just curious, as you understand the president's pardon power, if he were to do that, would that step in and end it all? If he just came out tomorrow and said, you know what, I'm tired of this. This is all a hoax and it's fake and I'm pardoning everybody. So you might as well stop what you're doing.
Well, he can do that. He can also try to fire Mueller. He can do a lot of things as president. And he himself is immune from being prosecuted, at least in the normal course of federal prosecutions. However, I do not think that once a president does that, whether it's President Trump or any other president, once they step over the boundary here, because I think that everybody will see that he is not doing it for the good of the country, then that's the reason why we have checks and balances. Congress will have to step in, or even the judiciary in some form would have to step in and stop this. I'm a great believer in our justice system, and I do believe that that our justice system works and that something is going to happen if he is going to start doing that. Congress is not going to sit and watch this happening without reaction.
Now, by the way, do you also know whether the power of impeachment, as you just said, the president cannot be charged with a crime. So even if Robert Mueller came up with all sorts of things that tied the president personally into this, he would be immune. He would then face potential impeachment proceedings, which are purely political. So in the face of a Republican Congress, who knows what would happen? I won't pull you in that direction. But I'm curious, other people like Mike Pence, the vice president, does he share and enjoy the same immunity as the president does from Robert Mueller?
Good question. The president enjoys this immunity. Members of Congress do not, because you know that they can get indicted.
And many of them
do. I believe that Mike Pence also does not share that immunity, but I may be I've not researched that topic.
Well, my guess is, because I don't even know if we've had, I mean, listen, we've had a situation, we've had Spiro Agnew, but the vice presidents tend to resign maybe before they get to the point of what's going to happen. And so and again, I haven't done the research, but it would seem to me that the presidential power of pardon and immunity is only for the president, and anybody else is fair game, other than the fact that the president could then pardon him.
Right, and I think in this situation, I don't think that they're going to even look at Mike Pence. I don't think that Mike Pence is a target here. I do think that they are trying to look into Mr. Trump's inner circle, and if they, go after, attack, indict, find wrongdoing with his immediate inner circle, then that would lead to some sort of a reaction by President Trump that would create a scenario probably where he himself will have to step down, or he will be impeached, or he cannot be indicted. But I think that they are trying to get as close as possible to him in order to get a reaction relating from him.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, when you say the vice president not necessarily tied, and I don't know if he is or not, but he was head of the transition committee. And, of course, when the whole Flynn scenario came out, Mike Pence was on one of the Sunday morning talk shows saying this is the first time hearing of it. And so many other things that Mike Pence says he knew nothing about, which as chair of the transition committee, it's just difficult to believe that he knew nothing about nothing. And so that's what I wonder, whether if it did come out through all this investigation and various people like Papadopoulos pointing up, I had a meeting with Flynn with the Vice President Pence. I mean, I don't know. But what I'm saying is that the whole idea of the government investigation is to catch people in lies. If, in fact, they say they didn't do something and they did, that's what Mueller's after, is to say, no, you did. And then I just wonder, what are the consequences?
Correct. And I think that it's important to point out that lies, when somebody tells lies on TV or fake news, I don't think that's punishable. It's a punishable offense. But when you tell lies to under oath to Congress or to FBI or to an FBI, doesn't even have to be under oath. Any federal law enforcement, if you lie to federal law enforcement, that's a chargeable offense.
Yeah.
So if Mike Pence comes out on TV and says, I was not there, I didn't hear, I didn't know, that is not necessarily a crime. But if he said that to Congress or under oath or to an FBI agent, then it's an issue.
That's a great point, and that we don't know. Well, Gal, finally, I'm assuming one of the things I said on our air was, and I hear this from other analysts as well, that at this stage of things, we're not at the beginning of the end. We're kind of at the end of the beginning. Somebody with your vast experience, would you agree that in this process, we're probably at the end of a beginning?
Yes, I think it was the end with Papadopoulos, and now it's the beginning with Manafort and the beginning of much bigger things, I think.
Yeah. And all of this, if you were to put a timeline to it, is 2018 the year that things hit the fan, if they're going to?
Yes.
We're going to watch it play out, yeah. Gal Pozetsky.
It will be very interesting.
Oh, yeah, and I'll be talking to you again, I promise you. Gal Pozetsky, thanks for your return visit on the podcast, Pozetsky and Berliner. Feel free to contact him if you ever get in trouble out there, but none of my listeners ever would. But I appreciate your time, my friend.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for the legal perspective.
Thank you.
And so while we have the legal aspect under our belt right now, there is the political implications of all that has gone on as well. Of course, no question about that. Joining me, an old friend of the podcast, Richard Gordon, both a lawyer. He wears that hat as well, but also a political strategist. He's been around the politics biz for 30 years. And Richard, I thought this was a great topic to talk to you about, because my first question is this. With everybody's attention being focused in on indictments and plea agreements and what else did anybody know, Congress, back in session, can they actually turn their attention to tax reform and accomplishing anything, or does that just go by the wayside now because everybody's consumed with all the legal stuff?
Well, I think it makes an already difficult situation that much more difficult. I mean, let's be honest about the tax bill. First of all, none of us seem to know what it is. It changes by the minute, we may know more soon, but we really don't know exactly what is in it. And the problem is, on the Republican side of that street, is that you have an issue that if you're going to cut taxes, you're going to raise deficits. And there are people in the Senate who have made it very clear they won't vote for anything that does that. So it's always been a difficult road to hoe for these guys. Having said that, I think there's tremendous distraction now. I mean, I think people in Congress are going to have difficulty working with the White House. The White House is going to be very distracted. You know, Speaker Ryan and Leader McConnell should really get their guys together and really have a plan, because this is an opportunity for them to formulate a tax reform plan that makes sense, and not to wait for White House approval or direction, but to move forward on something dramatic. Having said that, it's going to be tough.
And some, I know Senator Lindsey Graham, for example, I think it was Lindsey Graham, who basically said if we don't do tax cuts, tax reform, they go back and forth because what they really want is tax reform, but all they're really talking about is tax cuts. And for listeners who aren't sure what the difference is, tax reform probably brings revenue neutral changes to the table, but tax cuts simply means we're increasing the deficit. Fair enough? Distinction?
Yeah, there's no reform here. This is to fulfill a campaign promise to cut taxes for largely wealthy people, but it's not really an attempt to reform the actual system, except for the fact that they're going to change the brackets. But yeah, it was Lindsey Graham who did say that if they don't pass something, basically they don't deserve or they will not get to be the majority.
Yeah, they're going to lose the majority.
2018. As a Democrat, I hope that he's right. I think that may be wishful thinking. They have Jared.
But is his logic right? Do you forget being a Democrat? Do you look and say he's got a point, or do you say, no, we're still in Trump world in this country? And although the polls show him, you know, down at about 33%, but he still has that third of the country completely behind him. And most Republicans, Richard, still run scared from this president.
Well, that's absolutely true. Look, I think there's a couple things here. I think in many, many districts, the Trump factor will weigh very heavily. And what we have seen is a complete lack of courage on Republican elected officials, except, you know, for a handful, Jeff Flake being one, Bob Corker being another, both of whom are retiring, to stand up to the president and just call him out when he's wrong. I think there will be a lot of people who will support the president because they feel they have to politically. But I think that, to be blunt, it is so hard to see how the Democrats, even with something like this, are able to recapture Congress because the Republicans have done such an excellent job of gerrymandering the country that it is hard to see without changing the districts where you get enough swing districts to win. But his larger point shouldn't be lost here. And the larger point is, the Republicans have the House, they have the Senate, they have the presidency. They have been given the power to direct where this country is going, and they're failing to do so. And having failed to do so, they should pay a price for that. And the price to pay is to lose electorally. That's really what he's saying. If we can't deliver on tax cuts, which we promised to do, then do we really deserve to be in charge? The answer is no.
Although what you're saying is, if I put all that together, but the truth is, come 2018, even if they don't pass anything, the odds are Republicans maintain control.
I think they will. I think it is extraordinarily difficult to see how they lose control of the House.
It's only about 20. Was it 22 seats they have to turn in the House?
It's possible, but again, it will have to come in districts where people, you know, really abandon Trump.
Right.
And to be honest, I just haven't looked at that yet to see what the numbers are in those specific districts. But if you look at a lot of there's so few swing districts. If you look 20 years ago, the number of swing districts was very large. So you could have a massive change in 1980. You could have a massive change, you know, after the Obamacare went in. You could have a huge swing in Congress. It's less likely these days because of the way the system is structured.
And do we keep a, is it a canary in the coal mine, this Alabama Senate election to replace Jeff Sessions, where you have Roy Moore, who is, you know, to the right of Attila the Hun, thinks that, you know, gays and lesbians should be, you know, prosecuted and all that kind of thing. And so the Democrats in Alabama sort of, we got a chance. And the polls, you know, may be closer than some expect. But I still think when Election Day comes, the odds of a Democrat winning a seat in Alabama, I just don't see it happening.
I completely agree. I think it sounds good right now. But, you know, this goes back to my comment about courage. If Mitch McConnell truly had courage, if the other senators really had a backbone, this would be a moment to step up and repudiate Judge Moore. He does not belong in the United States Senate. I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. I don't care what you are. This man does not belong in the Senate. And you know what? It would be better to elect a Democrat and beat him next time than to elect someone like this, someone who's so bigoted, who's so narrow-minded. Yeah, I think he's going to get elected. I'll be shocked if he doesn't. But wow, what a moment for Mitch McConnell and the Republican leadership to stand up, to have the guts to stand up and say, our candidate doesn't deserve to win. We're not going to endorse the other guy. Our candidate should not be in the Senate.
You know, back to the...
public would respect it.
Back to the sort of indictments and things we've been seeing as of late, and that is, there's some talk, you know, it's the chatter of analysts that don't be surprised if President Trump comes out and pardons the world, Manafort and Papadopoulos and who knows, but he just starts pardoning people. Politically, and there are those, or that he tries to fire Mueller. You know, I mean, there's so many different things he could do as president. I had the legal discussion with my last guest, but with you, I have to say, politically speaking, and it's this president we're talking about, not any president, this one, does he get away with it?
No, I don't think so. I think it's that old joke, you know, the person with a gun to the head and say, take one more step and I'll shoot. There is a step too far, and I think this would be a step too far. The American people may be tired already of the Russian investigation. I think generally they respect Robert Mueller for his career and his service. So I think there's an understanding that he's an honorable and a good man. I don't think Donald Trump could get away with that. I think that is way too much. It's interesting. The Manafort and the Gates indictments are so different than the Papadopoulos indictment.
Totally.
And it's interesting. And in some ways, you must admire. And as a lawyer, you have to tip your hat, you know, to Robert Mueller and how he did it. Because, you know, to me, I bet there was celebration in the White House. Oh, my goodness, they are indicting, you know, Manafort, not about something he did with us, but his failure to file as a foreign agent and his use of money and those things. Oh, my God. And it's like one of those horror movies where you think you've killed the alien, but then this huge monster jumps up. This is just the beginning. This is the tip of the iceberg. They've indicted Manafort on something that has little to do with what they were looking at, but the prosecutor could look at everything. But it gets Manafort in a position where he knows he's going to jail, because what he did, he's going to jail for, and it puts him in a position of, if you don't want to go to jail, you got to tell us the rest of the story. As a prosecutor, it was a brilliant move on his part, and I'm sure the White House, when they figured out that Papadopoulos was indicted, figured out the whole story and how it all links together.
You know, one of the questions that I got on air and people talk about, you know, and the president, stop looking at us. It's Hillary. It's her. And it's uranium and whatever. But my only question is this. I'm not going to get into that discussion with you. But my only question is, and what I've said on our air, is that Mueller has not been given the responsibility of looking to see whether there was a link between the Trump campaign and the 2016 election in Russia. He was given the opportunity and the charge to look at any collusion with Russia in 2016, which means that one day, at some point, he could come out with a charge against somebody on the Clinton side of things tied to one of these things people are talking about. That is within his purview, right?
Everything is within his purview. Yes, you're absolutely correct. He could look at anything he wants. And if the Democrats, if there was some collusion on the Democratic side with Russians in some way, shape, or form, he can look at that. I'm going to go a little further and say, I hope he does. I don't know what's there, but I think the American people need to know what's there. Our democracy is under attack. What the Russians did in 2016 is an attack on our very freedom. It is the core of who we are as a people, and we need to know. And if it puts Democrats in a hard spot, so be it. If it puts Republicans, so be it. We need to know, because we need to protect our country for the future. And that's the real important thing about all of this. And that's what people need to start focusing on. And that's what Donald Trump should be focusing on. You know, I think there's a way out of this for him. You know, I think there's a way out of this by literally coming clean and saying, hey, look, take everything. Here's what we know. You know, I want to know the answer, too. But instead, let's point fingers at, you know, Secretary Clinton. Let's blame the next guy. Now, they did get somebody in this. You know, Tony Podesta is a leading Democratic fundraiser, a leading Democratic operative, and obviously the brother of John Podesta, the campaign chairman.
Right.
That is an example of what happens. When you open Pandora's box, when you start looking at, you know, Manafort and his stuff, it started pulling in other people like John Podesta. When you start looking at this whole thing and start unraveling it, who knows who's going to be involved?
Yeah.
We just don't know yet, but I'd like to know.
Democrats, Republicans, and the point is, if that is the way it is, properly so, then it shows that Bob Mueller has from day one been doing his job properly.
Absolutely.
Richard Gordon, great strategist, lawyer, master of all trades. Thanks for sharing your insights with me. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
All right,
thank you.
Take care. And as we turn to theater now, I'll tell you, there's a really interesting production over at the Black Ensemble Theater that you need to see. It's sort of different, in my opinion, from a lot of the shows that go on there, and I see almost everything there. The current show is called Jackie Taylor's The Black Renaissance. It's a musical resistance against racism. And this really exemplifies Jackie Taylor's mission in life. It sort of comes into this one show where she just tackles it head on. We'll explain this as we go on. Joining me for this interview, of course, is the legend herself, Miss Jackie Taylor, who wrote this, wrote the music for it, almost all the music for it. And we're going to talk about that. Jackie, welcome back to the podcast because you are a returning guest.
It is always my pleasure, always.
And joining us as well, the character is called one of the elders, so I got to say that, but it's not fair to this young, just artistic talent who's a legend over at the Black Ensemble Theater. She is one of my favorites. Can't help but hug her every time I see her, anywhere I see her. Rhonda Preston. She is a seasoned actress there. She does great stuff. But, you know, you're called the elder, so I'm going to have to go with that. Rhonda, hi there.
Okay.
And of course, I'm not going to get a complaint from our third guest, who's known as the younger, and that's Lynn Solar. She's a professional singer and songwriter, making her debut with the Black Ensemble Theater. I have that right, Lynn? Right? This is your first show with them.
Yeah.
So you know what? Before I even get to this show, since the rest of us know the Black Ensemble for years and years and years, let me ask you: talk to me what it's like about appearing in a Jackie Taylor production with Jackie Taylor and being part of this legendary theater crew.
Oh wow, it's amazing. I've known about Jackie Taylor for quite some time, and it's so awesome to just be a part of something that has a living legend operating and having such longevity for the theater and just a great reputation for great performances. So I'm very excited, blessed, and honored to be a part.
And you were smart not to put a year to that. But then again, Jackie, look, you know, I was part of your celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Black Ensemble last year, so clearly we know you're 43, 44, whatever that may be. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But let me ask you, because you and I, every time I interview you and we talk about the mission of the Black Ensemble Theater, you say it is to eradicate racism in your lifetime and certainly in our lifetime. And then it led to the Black Renaissance. What led you to decide to say, you know what, I've got this message, but it's time that it becomes the focus of a show?
Well, you know, first of all, we're in difficult times. The politics in our country is amazingly transforming as we speak, and it's becoming a much more divisive an atmosphere of fear, and it's just been a very difficult time. You know, Paul, this was supposed to be the Harlem Renaissance, but as I started researching the Harlem Renaissance, it became very clear to me that I really needed to talk about racism head on, how it started, where it started, why it started, and what can we do about it. But we can't do anything about the problem if we don't know the roots of it. And that's what Harlem Renaissance does. It's both the roots.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing is, because that's part of the reason behind my question was, you know, you didn't write this thing just since Donald Trump became president in January. You know, this has been in a work in progress for a long time. So that's why I'm sort of curious. And yet when we go to the show, the show now opens with some words seen of Barack Obama. And then there's this jarring shift to a photo of Donald Trump, President Trump, which triggers some reaction in the audience. So that certainly wasn't in your mind when you first began to create the show, because I think it was before all of that. And so this develops in a way that it has a message, not just one of history. You often teach people about history in your shows, but this is one where you didn't want people just walking out just saying, yeah, I'd learned some history. You want them to do something different going forward.
That's right. I want people to understand how they participate, even subconsciously, when it comes to racism, because that's the only way that we're going to solve it. That's the only way that we're going to resolve it, is to understand what role we play and be aware of our choices in perpetuating a racist society,
yeah,
subconsciously or consciously.
Rhonda, let me come to you,
yes,
because, look, I've seen you in so many different roles, and so many roles you have such fun with over the years. I mean, I think I first remember you in Queen, as the Queen in the other Cinderella, and,
yes,
of course, you've been in the Josephine Baker story playing Bessie Smith, I think it was, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So, but I have to ask you, this again is different, and the expectations are different on you as an actress. You're not just, you know, presenting the role of a historical figure, but you yourself have a message that you have to give to the younger people in the cast, and of course, younger people in the audience and who see the show. Talk to me about how being in this show is a bit different from other challenges you've had at the Black Ensemble.
Oh, definitely, it is different. I originally thought I was going to be on stage flapping, you know.
Right.
I thought it was going to be the Harlem Renaissance. And then Jackie, vision changed. And as she wrote, and as I read, and as I embodied the person that she created me to be, it was just something that I had to be a part of. I am so overwhelmed every night that we do a performance. I learn something from this. I've been a Northerner all of my 25 years of life. Ha ha. And it some of the things that Jackie's brought out were things that I was not even aware of at the age that I am today. So to be in this production at this time, like she said, I'm overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed. I'm very happy that she chose me, because it has given me a insight of things that I just was not aware of.
Lynn,
so I appreciate her.
Yeah,
appreciate
Lynn, you're a songwriter yourself, so yes. I'm just curious. So much of the music in this show has been written by Jackie. Songs, I mean, my favorites, they just come to mind. I'm Walking, Talking, Praying About Freedom. I love Pull It Out by the Root, a little reggae. Just some great songs. So I'm just curious, Lynn, as a songwriter yourself, what reaction do you have to the music and songwriting of Miss Jackie Taylor, who's written so many songs during the course of her career, but here almost the whole show?
Oh, wow. I really love that question, because when we first got started, I was very new to, of course, this process of seeing Jackie Taylor create songs on the spot and during rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And for me, I felt really inspired. As a singer-songwriter, I'm still growing in my writing, and I'm still growing and just kind of putting it all out there and putting, like, emotion through things and just putting words out and not judging the work while it's in creation. And so I feel like I've picked up new skills for my future songwriting, because usually it kind of takes me some months to write some songs, and for Jackie it was like an hour.
Yeah, I know. It's upsetting for the rest of us, I know.
But, right.
But, and Jackie, let me ask you, if I was to describe the first half of the show, that seems to be sort of the historical piece. We learn about the 465 years of racism, which I don't forget because you wrote a song about it for the show. But we have the history, and the second part of the show is this interaction between the elders, the youngers, where they're each kind of, you know, how do we deal with this? And by the way, one of my favorite songs in there is the song about racism, which all the things that people say, and they don't think they're being racist. And and the song teaches us that all those things you think when you're being real open, and you're racist. But I have to ask you, and when people leave the theater, am I right about that sort of split, that we're going to teach you some history, and then we're going to kind of build fill the gap between the generations, and then send the audience off to do something about it?
Yeah, that's right. It's uplifting. It's inspirational, because that's the only way that we really want to change and want to transform. We have to be uplifted. We have to. Our spirit has to be moved in order for us to move, and that's what the second act is all about. It's about moving that spirit, pushing people to a place of, hey, I'm going to embrace this, I'm going to understand this, and it's going to change my life.
And, you know, the theater, which is located north on Clark Street, from the very beginning when I've interviewed Jews many years ago, but I always sort of said to you, gee, what are you doing, you know, up here north when the Black Ensemble Theater, we would think it'd be on the south side. And I just think it's always worth kind of repeating Well, your answer at that time to me was you don't need to be on the south side. You need to be on the north side. And I notice as the shows go on, your casting is it's turning into Hamilton. Because what I mean by that is it's getting to be more colorblind. You have people of different races in all the shows and stuff. There's been a change on that, Jackie, over the years, hasn't there been? It just seems that there's more presence, more diversity even now in the casting than there was years ago.
You know, I think that's just people's perception, because Black Ensemble has always been diverse on stage. We've always, depending on what the production is, have had a diverse cast. I think people are just really becoming aware of it.
And that's
more
not
so unusual.
Yeah, and of course, going to a community which needs to come and see these shows and appreciate what they are saying. And Rhonda, again, when you prepare for these roles, and you've got, by the way, Wendell Jackson, I guess he's truly the elder in this show. There's a reference, Rhonda, by the way, I have to ask you, there's a reference to him being 80 or in his 80s in the show. Is that a comment in the script, or is he really?
Really?
No, that's for real.
Absolutely.
Well,
that's real.
Well, he's just amazing. And every time he walks on stage, the audience kind of laughs and smiles and warms up. He just has this charismatic connection to the audience. So, Rhonda, how important is it? I mean, you know, Jackie could have written this show without this generational divide in it, in terms of elders speaking to younger. How important is it that is a distinction that needs to be drawn between the generations?
Because I feel that I can't, through my eyes, through my voice, I can reach the generation, two generations under me. But with the youth in this production, they can reach the generation of today. And I think by her putting it, it's actually three generations in this show. By her putting it in tiers, it helps my insight to help the people who are under me to understand what I've gone through and see through my eyes and understand what they've gone through to give to the younger people. So I think the way she layered this production is absolutely just genius. It's genius. That's all I really can say about that matter.
Well, Lynn, let me come to you, because you are the representative of the younger folks in the show, but mm-hmm. you're young as well. So I'm just curious, when you went through the experience of reading the script, getting ready, you know, practicing, rehearsing for the show, did you have a sense of was life in the history of African Americans more difficult than maybe you had studied or experienced in school? I guess
Absolutely.
I'm asking. I'm wondering how much
Absolutely.
Of an eye-opening experience it was as a
it
young
was
person.
An eye-opening experience, you know. Well, I'm going to be candid. I'm 63 years old. And in my lifetime, I've never really, really deeply experienced a lot of racism. My mother, I believe, kept me in an environment where I didn't have to be totally involved until I got to be an adult, was when I started to feel some sting of racism. And so this particular piece that Jackie has written was really, really an enlightening piece for me. Some things I knew, but some things I was not aware of at all. And I'm a Black person living in the United States, and I was not aware of it.
Yeah.
So just like I am, there's several people in the world like Ron Preston. So I believe that this piece is not only good for me or great for me to have been a part of, but it'll be great for people to come and see.
Well, Jackie, I know that
I learned a whole lot doing this. In the reading, it was very touching. It was very enlightening. It's just a good piece, a very good piece.
Jackie, it looks like you've got some fans who are in the cast, too.
She does all the time for me.
Well, the Black Renaissance, a musical resistance against racism, playing up at the Black Ensemble Theater until November 20th, unless there's some sort of magical change in that date moving forward. But we're going to assume it's going to end on the 20th, so you want to get your tickets and see it just as soon as you can. And while seats might still be available, the website is blackensembletheater.org, so it's easy enough to get your tickets online, blackensembletheater.org. And here's the other thing, and I got to tell you, Ms. Taylor and everybody else, I always, and you know, when I come to the theater, I'm almost always trying to bring somebody new to it, introduce somebody new to it when I can. And every time I bring somebody new, they become a fan of the Black Ensemble Theater, because they walk out, have the experience with that cast, get to meet everybody, and they just fall in love with it. And that's, you're doing something really special over there, Jackie Taylor, that's different from almost any other theater that I can think of.
Thank you, Paul.
All right.
You work hard at it.
Well, I know you do. You spend your whole career, all 41 years of it, working hard at that life. Jackie Taylor's The Black Renaissance, a musical resistance. Don't miss, against racism. I get that full title in. Don't miss it. And my thanks to you, Ms. Taylor, Ms. Preston, Ms. Solar. Thank you so much for being with me, and I'll see you again at the theater real soon.
Love you, Paul.
Love you guys, too. Take care.
Okay.
Take care. Bye.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And, hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.